Welcome to the Werewolf Den, where we delve into gaming concepts behind White Wolf's Werewolf the Apocalypse.
I'm Amelin.
And I'm Ryan.
Welcome back. We're going to go ahead and dive right into what we called in our last episode, everyone's first tribe, the Children of Gaia.
So the Children of Gaia have a lot of general appeal for two reasons. For one, the books don't really give them any pet cause to sort of cling to. So with the Black Furies, we have their association with creation and thus feminism. With the Bonars, we talked about, you know, economic inequalities and how that sort of this political aspect they can jump into. The Children of Gaia on their face don't have that.
I like to call this, and you'll see it come up with another tribe, the concept of a tactic as opposed to a philosophy. And the Children of Gaia are definitely kind of guilty of this. It's the notion that the worm can be defeated through passive or pacifistic means, as opposed to, like, identifying an actual cause or issue that is brought about by the worm and dealing with it. And this is simultaneously appealing for new players, but it's also kind of problematic for making good, well-balanced characters.
Mm-hmm. Because the Children of Gaia are not passive, not in the least. And having that idea, again, like you mentioned, doesn't create a good, functional character. You're not playing in a tabletop to be passive. You want to be active.
It's one of those things where people, when they go into the tribe, they either go in wanting to do one of two things, I find. They're either new and they're like, oh, well, this is a tribe that's kind of removed from all of the really intimidating looking culture, so I can hopefully safely learn at a distance, which, because they're not nearly quite as submerged into the culture as, per se, like the Fianna or the Silver Fangs are, doing that learning from a distance thing actually has the disadvantage of potentially skewing your view. And then there's the other problem then of people will come in thinking that the Children of Gaia are the tribe of Philodoxes, because when you build characters and you're building the character around this notion of somebody who is pacifist, you immediately go to like the mediator. And when you take into the concept that so many tabletop RPGs build themselves around the concept of the five-man band, you kind of build this idea of, oh, I'm going to come in and play a character that's going to be a mediator and solve the issues between my pack. And the problem with that is it's dependent on all the other players not getting along for the sake of your character concept. And that's not organic.
Yeah. You need to have something to stand for before you can go in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're just standing on no legs.
Yeah. In order to be a proper mediator, you need to have convictions of your own.
Mm-hmm. So, talking about those convictions, the Children of Gaia are sort of termed as the tribe of peace. Unicorn herself is very against unnecessary conflict, and I think it's important to state that unnecessary, particularly when it relates to the Garu Nation. So within the story meta plot of Werewolf the Apocalypse, there's a lot of inter-Garu conflict. The Wars of Rage, There are conflicts between tribes, and there's sort of this underlying narrative that if the werewolves could just cooperate and work together instead of working against each other, then the fight against the worm would have gone completely different.
It is very much a thing where the books more or less hammer into you that the reason the Garu are losing, and they are, is because they don't know how to get along and coincide with each other.
Mm-hmm.
The Children of Gaia have kind of stepped into this notion of kind of being like the glue or the band-aids that are trying to heal and bring the nation together. And this is a good thing, but it's also difficult to role play.
Yeah, because like you mentioned, if you don't have people that are, you know, spouting civil war, if you don't have a Tony Stark and a Captain America to play off of each other, then the Children of Gaia are sort of left out. So it's important to sort of analyze the tribe from an internal individual standpoint, and then understand that, yes, this is one aspect or element of their activities. is working as this glue.
And because of this, when we're going to talk about how to best run and play with Children of Gaia, we're going to explain to you how to do it as proactive players, or as a storyteller encouraging proactive players. Because if you're dealing with that spectator player, it doesn't matter what tribe they're playing in, you're going to have the same issues, and it's regardless of tribes. Mm-hmm. So it's a much more interesting topic, and hopefully much more helpful to talk about how to do Children of Gaia proactively.
So the key theme that I want to focus on with the Children of Gaia is the concept of war, and specifically war as an aspect of the Worm. There is an aspect of Worm known as the Warbringer that, you know, World War I was the Worm. That was the Worm. There's no, like, great crusade calling this to action. It is war almost for war's sake. And every single war, regardless of how altruistic sort of the motivations may be, is still an aspect of the Worm. It brings devastation and hardship to everyone it touches. And the Children of Gaia engage with this better than any other tribe does.
Exactly. One of the things that I always try to instill in my players when you're playing Children of Gaia is people will walk in and they have this notion of the passive hippie that smokes weed and is like, let's chill out and be bros, man, that old stereotype. When in actuality, the sort of hippie that Children of Gaia are actual hippies that did things like find the black leftist movements, did things like throw stones at Stonewall, did things like organize the anti-Iraq protests. The Black Lives Matter protests right now, I could guarantee you, I don't know the individuals that are funding and heading the most peaceful protests right now, but if they were Garou, they would be Children of Gaia.
So, yeah, look for ways to be active in promoting peace. And the other thing to sort of mention on that is that you are still Garou. You are still created as a machine of war. When the Black Spiral Dancers are raiding the cairn, you're not just going to sit there and smoke some pot and ask them to sing Kumbaya with you. There is a time and a place for violence. And Unicorn, as the totem, understands this.
One of the problems that we very frequently come across when we get players is, within the game, there is a background merit that you can achieve called Totem, where you can pledge your pack to follow the ideals of a specific totem, and following those ideals will give you obvious stat boosts and mechanic boosts, but it also informs your pack's philosophy as a whole. You have packs generally are all sorts of different tribes coming together with various different philosophies. Your pack totem is the philosophy that your tribe, or not your tribe, that your pack decides to pursue as a whole, using the various philosophies to inform it from the different tribes.
Mm-hmm. So Unicorn's big restriction as a pack totem is that you cannot engage in violence against other innocents.
Do not harm innocents.
Right.
And it's one of those things where a bad storyteller will look at that and be like, oh, okay, let's just throw constantly a bunch of innocents in front of the pack and be like, haha, you can't do anything about this. You just have to let it happen. And that's bad storytelling, but there's also an easy way to get around it. The easy way to get around it is understanding that sometimes violence is necessary for long-term peace. The concept of the character that is going to war for the sake of the ideal of this will be the last war is a strong concept that works really well with the Children of Gaia.
Yeah.
But player-wise, the reason we bring this up in particular is because players will always try to find different ways to subvert bands and mechanics that they don't like with various different things. And the thing that I most frequently find that they'll do this with is a totem from the expansion books known as Black Unicorn.
So every totemic spirit has what's known as a spirit brood. So allied or affiliated spirits that give you an interesting new direction to explore, but still fit with that core theme. So like the Black Furies have Medusas, still within that Greek wheelhouse, very focused on feminism. The Bonars, we sort of mentioned, have, you know, things that aren't quite so cute or cuddly. So skunks, mice, vermin, centipedes, things of that sort. Black Unicorn is part of the brood of Unicorn. And it just doesn't fit with the wheelhouse of Unicorn.
Well, I would say she fits within the wheelhouse of Unicorn, but the problem is that players will usually try to take on this spirit as a means to just subvert and avoid the ban of Unicorn.
Right. Black Unicorn is Angry Unicorn, who is fed up with, you know, the ineffectiveness of peace movements, is fed up with the worm's exploitations, and just wants to smash. And yeah, like you mentioned, a lot of players will sort of look to Black Unicorn as a way to be like, well, I'm going to focus on Black Unicorn so I don't have to do all of this non-violence stuff. So I can have collateral damage, so I can be Batman and run over someone and it's okay because I'm pursuing a greater evil kind of thing.
One of the ways that I tend to get around this as a storyteller is to simply state if something is within the brood of a totemic spirit, it is that spirit. It's just an aspect of the spirit. Mm-hmm. The spirits themselves can be incredibly multifaceted, especially when you start getting up into those higher echelons. Black Unicorn is Unicorn, and that's what I tell my players whenever they try to bring any of that stuff to me. If it is a spirit that is outside of the different brews and is just completely unique from an expanded book, I'm generally cool. That sounds great. But all too often, people that try to weasel in and go with, oh, it's a brood of this much more established one, I just say, no, just go with the established one, and that one's a brood. That one is a face that it will occasionally show you.
Mm-hmm. And I think that could be an interesting thing to explore. If you are in one of those difficult situations where saving everyone might end up, you know, letting the villain get away or letting the villain cause more collateral damage. And should you let this one person die in order to save 10 in the future? I think that could be an interesting dilemma to explore with a Children of Gaia character.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a lot of people just look to Black Unicorn as a way to be Batman, to be the anti-hero that doesn't give a darn if 10 people die when they, you know, blow up a building. And if you're just using it as an excuse to not engage with the core theme, then yeah, it's doing a great disservice to the tribe as a whole, I think.
Mm-hmm. Say hi to our cat, by the way.
Yes, Shakes really wants to chime in here.
Yeah.
She has a lot to say about the Children of Gaia. Come here, get closer to the mic, maybe that'll help. One of the other themes of the Children of Gaia that's worth talking about is the concept of allyship.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, a lot of people will start off, their first foray into Werewolf the Apocalypse will be with a Children of Gaia character because it seems so accessible and non-threatening. But in order to effectively be a Children of Gaia and to fulfill this role as being an ally to the other tribes' plights and concerns, you need to understand those things. And I think this is extremely relevant, especially in today's political climate, where with movements like Black Lives Matter, it's on you to educate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of putting that emotional and material and time labor on disenfranchised groups is doing harm to them. And so within that sort of mindset, if you're going to play a Children of Gaia character in the hopes of, you know, being buddy-buddy with everyone, you need to have at least a rudimentary understanding of those conditions and those situations. And so from that direction, Children of Gaia is probably one of the more advanced tribes in order to play. Because if you know absolutely nothing about the setting and the tribes, then you're completely missing out on that aspect.
Mm-hmm. It is definitely a thing where with that allyship, if you're kind of just leaning back and trying to absorb everything, it's more likely to just kind of make you more completely lost than it is anything else. So I really like the notion of a Child of Gaia coming in, and maybe if a Bonar is becoming disheartened because they are in this chronic poverty and hardship. If little brother is constantly dealing with racism at every turn, the best thing for a child of Gaia is to understand that these are the plights of the other tribes and to be like, I am here to help you.
Mm-hmm. And I don't need to necessarily ask you, you know, what is your problem? How can I help? It is, I understand the issue of colonialism and am willing to, you know, work with you and do something to help alleviate this problem. Ignorance is not a good quality for a Children of Gaia character.
Children of Gaia are also an excellent way to escape one of the more problematic issues within Werewolf the Apocalypse. And that is that a number of tribes will try to tie a specific cultural heritage to the meaning and the philosophy of the tribe. And sometimes it really works. Little Brother is an example of when it works.
Mm-hmm.
But as much as I love the Black Furies are an example of when it doesn't.
Right. They're not Greeks. They're people focused on creation and thus feminism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the Children of Gaia work really well as, and this is canonically, it's expressed within the books themselves, that the Children of Gaia are more than happy to accept people who have been rejected by these heritage cultures. If you're Scandinavian and every Garu you knew throughout your life has been a Geta Fenris, but you do not sync up with that philosophy, then the Children of Gaia are more than happy to accept you. And I think it's a good way, in a broad sense, to sort of break that heritage tribe aspect. I've never enjoyed it. It adds weight to the argument that when you're going through your rite of passage and you're getting your tribe, that the tribal totems are analyzing you and assessing you to see if you're a valid fit.
Mm-hmm.
The Children of Gaia, much like the Bonars, are very open to accepting people from outside of their typical ranks.
Mm-hmm.
So long as you share that mentality and that philosophy, you will fit in the Children of Gaia. And I think this is an awesome way to sort of bring in the flavors of different cultures. If you want to have Scandinavian flair, if you want to be a Viking, but not in the Geta Fenris sense, Children of Gaia is a perfect way to do that. It opens up so many doors and options to creating very interesting and unique and dynamic characters because of this aspect. And I think that's a really cool part of the tribe as a whole.
Yeah. One of the things that they very frequently talk about with this whole flavor aspect to different culturally accepting is that Children of Gaia will take in, like we said, they'll take in Garu from various different cultures. And this also means that if you are in a tribe like the Silver Fangs, where the pressures of being a Silver Fang, because there are pressures to being a Silver Fang, are just too much for you, the Children of Gaia will come and tell you it is okay to feel those pressures. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't necessarily always have to result in you becoming a Children of Gaia. Sometimes a good Child of Gaia character can be that outside voice that just tells various players and tells various NPCs it's okay, and then just lifts them up to be strong enough to be in those other tribes, per se. It's very common for Children of Gaia to be den mothers and den fathers for this particular reason, because they are there to lift up, to educate, to help.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, I think we've covered most everything that we really want to cover with this tribe.
Mm-hmm. Wanted to sort of break ground on it and show the depth the tribe has, because very often that gets overlooked.
Mm-hmm. Very often. It's so frequently. Like, I know in your LARP, we had a number of players who were new players that just came in and just didn't know what to do with themselves. And so other players, with the best intentions, some of them not so much,
mm-hmm.
would come in and just hand them character sheets and be like, you should play this. 9 times out of 10, they would hand them a Child of Gaia character and say it's because that's the easy thing to play. And then so often, we would hear complaints later from players that took that advice and decided, well, I guess I'm not actually a child of Gaia. I've seen this happen with other tribes where players will just be like, I want to play this stereotype, and somebody will hand them the tribe and they'll be like, oh, okay, yeah, no, that sounds fine, that sounds great. And then you actually start to dig into the tribe and it's like, no, this is not a fit at all.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, and I also want to talk about the Child of Gaia Arun. Yes. That this works exceptionally well. I always like to highlight like one or two gifts that I think really, really bring a lot to the table. And one of them is, I think, called Mercy. It's a very easy gift to learn. I think it's rank one or rank two, where all of your lethal attacks now do bashing. So you can be in Kratos form and bite into a fellow's head, and it will most certainly be a terrifying experience for that individual to have a werewolf chomping at their cranium. But you're not going to kill them. And this, again, sort of allows you to engage in violence as a resort without breaking that mentality of the tribe.
Mm-hmm.
That, yes, there is a time and a place for physical violence, especially in, you know, the situation of the war with the worm.
Especially when you're dealing with creatures that may not be in the state of mind, particularly like with Fomori.
Yes.
Where they do not understand why the violence is being inflicted upon them.
Mm-hmm. That was something that happened quite a lot in the LARP I ran, where there was one Fomori who wasn't indoctrinated by the worm or anything. He had just, you know, eaten one too many cheeseburgers at the worm-infested fast food joint and ended up in this situation. And when the players found out that he was a Fomori, they showed no mercy. They locked him in a meat cooler, and eventually they killed him, and to get his body out of the facility, they, like, put him through a meat grinder. It was ridiculous how villainous and despicable the players were in this instance. And this was just a wrong place, wrong time dude.
Mm-hmm.
And the Children of Gaia, I don't want to say that redemption stories should happen a lot in Werewolf the Apocalypse, because the worm is so insidious. Black Spiral Dancers are terribly turned and sort of beyond that threshold for most instances. But the Children of Gaia are in a position more than any other tribe to explore that concept of, you know, where is the line between innocence and guilt when it comes to the machinations of, you know, this great and powerful corrupted spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's a lot of room to play as always, any auspice within the tribe. But Child of Gaia Arun is too much overlooked because there's this idea that the tribe is all about peace.
Oh. All right. And with that, I think we've covered most everything we wanted to cover.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll go ahead and let you go, let you mull around on that for a little bit. And next time, we're going to cover the history of the Garu, more or less.
Yep, with our first big heritage tribe, the Fianna.
All right, have a good one.